You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program is coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. My name's Joseph Toscombe, hosting today's program. If you're wondering what anarchy is all about, anarchos without rulers. It's not what's happening in the world today. It's about creating society without rulers. What gives the buffoons of the world the ability to determine the lives of billions of people? Inequalities in power and wealth. So the anarchist struggles, the struggle to devolve power, possibly through direct democratic means, and the struggle to hold wealth in common and use for the common good. Very simple concepts. It's amazing how many derogatory, negative associations occur in the world, especially the Western world, English-speaking Western world, with the word anarchy, anarchism. It's just amazing. Obviously, we're all tainted with original sin. We're all evil. We're born evil, and we need rulers with a fist of iron, with a fist in a velvet glove to keep us under control, to stop us from raping, stealing, and murdering from each other. Let's move on. Nothing happens in a vacuum. I'll give you an example. Your skin is your protection against the outside environment. It's your biggest organ, your skin. And if your skin breaks down for a variety of reasons, whether you're injured, whether you've got an ulcer, whatever, it's a direct communication with the outside world. And quite likely, you'll develop some type of infection. And normally, we're able to control these infections with growing antibiotic-resistance bacteria. Some people die of overwhelming infection. And it's the same with the body politic, the same with the humanity. And nothing happens in a vacuum. Things happen because of what we are surrounded with, the institutions we develop and the type of societies we create and the values that we espouse within those particular societies. So I'm interested in the growth of the attention economy. Yeah, you like that word, the attention economy? No, I didn't make it up. It's an old word. And how it's linked to the worldwide growth of fascism. The attention economy and its relationship to the worldwide growth of fascism. Because what we are seeing around the world, whether it's in Russia, whether it's in the US of A, whether it's in China, whether it's Myanmar, Sudan, you name it, Israel, is a growth of fascism. Growth of authoritarian movements where small groups of people are either elected to power, seize power, and use that power to enrich themselves and promote their particular, ideological fantasies, their ideological wet dreams. So what is the attention economy? The attention economy as a relatively new phenomenon, maybe 2 decades old at the most, maybe 2.5 decades. I mean, in the past, we talked about transnationalism, transnational corporations, determining the political, social, cultural agenda. Now, obviously, transnational corporations continue to have some impact on that agenda. The last 2 decades, what we've seen is the growth of the attention economy. So what is the attention economy? The attention economy is directly linked to the growth of virtual platforms which have a worldwide reach. And these virtual platforms are either owned by the state in a minority of cases, but in the majority of cases by a handful of private companies, normally, and in some cases by individuals. Now, the attention economy is based on the fact that they need you to access their material. Because they make their money, they make their wealth, that's why they're called billionaires or multi-billionaires, from the fact that hundreds of millions of eyeballs become attached to particular sites. The greater the number of eyeballs, the greater the advertising revenue. So in the past, we used to talk about products, and products were inanimate things. Yeah, like televisions, cars, cheese, products. But now we have become the products. It's our eyeballs which are the mechanism via which we not only see the growth of revenue for a shrinking number of people, but what we see is a shrinking number of people having a profound impact on the way society functions. Now, as a human being, we get bored easily, especially when we're in the virtual world. And in order to attract our attention, what we see in the attention economy is the growth of sites which promote hatred and division, which marginalise and criminalise minorities, which reduce all human activity to a revenue-making device. They call it monetarisation, you know. You monetarise. So what we've seen is the increasing use of hatred and division as a mechanism via which to attract people's attention to particular sites. And as that attention grows, what we see is the spillover from the virtual world into the real world. And we see the growth of movements which are fashioned, moulded by what's happening in the virtual world. So we see an increasing growth of so-called conspiracy theories, which is neither here or there in the majority of cases. If people believe the earth is flat, who cares? If people believe COVID doesn't exist, it's an issue. But much more dangerous, we are seeing the growth of movements which are based on a hatred which is manufactured in the virtual world to increase the revenue of a minuscule minority of people. And to a significant degree, this is one of the major drivers of movements which allow buffoons to be elected as president in Washington and allow dictators in Russia and China to maximise their grip on society. To a significant degree, this is what has allowed the Israeli state to use its warped ideology to create conditions which allow them to get away with mass murder using the excuse of self-defense. So I said before, nothing grows in a vacuum. You need soil. You need to fertilize that soil. And in the past, it was harder to fertilize that soil unless there was some type of major breakdown in society. And to a significant degree, the growth of fascism in Italy and the growth of Nazism in Germany and the growth of the Japanese imperial forces was due to local conditions where masses of people found themselves in situations of being disenfranchised and unemployed, and particular ideologies was able to grab hold in those countries. It took decades for that to occur. It's different today. People talk about pylons and the virtual economy. The difference today is through these platforms, we can have hatred spread in a millisecond and it stays there forever. Creating the conditions which allow the growth of increasing fascist movements. Who would have thought 20 years ago that we would see people calling themselves Nazis and parading as Nazis in Australia? Who would have thought we would see the growth of social movements which are totally based on a racist ideology? The fact is, we have entered Mr. Huxley's Brave New World. We have entered that brave new world where facts are irrelevant, where ideas and science is irrelevant. A world based on feeling and manipulation, not thinking and reasoning. So hopefully, next time you log on to the virtual world, next time you have a little chat with your chat box, next time you see some of this hateful propaganda, you begin to understand why we are slipping back into barbarism in around the world. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. My name's Joseph Toscano. That brings me to the next point, free speech, all right? Now, the first thing to remember is there is no free speech under the Australian Constitution. You can have free speech during an election campaign, but that's about it. Go through the Australian Constitution, you won't find an amendment like the United States of America, which theoretically gives you free speech. Then you think, free speech, what's free speech? And if I started blabbling on this program for you to break shop windows and, you know, steal and, you know, burn down banks and all this crap, right? That could be considered to be free speech. Because what I'm doing is I'm promoting crime in terms of property crime, okay? But it's fascinating that when you use the same analogy to criticise so-called free speech, which marginalises and criminalises and causes significant damage to sections of society, that we see these emerging authoritarian forces using that terminology to somehow protect themselves from prosecution. I mean, it's one thing to talk about property crimes, another thing to spew hatred publicly regarding minority groups or even majority groups in society. And using that umbrella of free speech to somehow justify the hatred you're creating in society in terms of words, actions, which promoted against groups that have obtained a little bit of traction in society is ridiculous. Three, speech is not about marginalising people. It's not about promoting criminal behaviour for which you would be prosecuted. As I said before, if I promoted shoplifting or looting, I would be prosecuted by the state for encouraging crimes against property. But if I promote ideas, not on this particular radio station, because we have policies regarding these ideas, but if I promote this generally, whether it's on the virtual media or the Murdoch Empire to a large degree, it's somehow acceptable under the banner of free speech. There is nothing like free speech in society. What there is speech which divides us, marginalises people, criminalises section of society, and speech which brings us together as a community, which ensures that wealth is held in common, which ensures that as many people as possible are involved in the decision-making processes of society. To me, that is what free speech is. Well, a few things, just like to clarify a few things. Now, since 2005, the Anarchist Media Institute has been since 2002, the Anarchist Media Institute has been holding celebrations in Ballarat on the 3rd of December to highlight the continuing importance that the Eureka Rebellion has in this country. And these celebrations are always on the 3rd of December. They start at 4 a.m. and they finish about 10 p.m. and I'll keep you informed about that in the next few weeks. So put that in your diary. It's a Wednesday, 3rd of December, Ballarat, corner of Eureka Street and Stall Street in Ballarat. Over the last few years, we have teamed up with Ballarat Trades Hall to ensure these events continue long after the Anarchist Media Institute has disappeared. And this year, once again, although there's been a change in secretaries, we will be holding the Eureka celebrations in Ballarat on Wednesday, the 3rd of December. Now, part of that process is that we have six Eureka Australia Day medals, which are given to activists who have made a difference. We're not talking about the people that are always in the media. We're talking about the people who do the hard work, who ensure that campaigns succeed, who have spent decades of their lives promoting equality and justice. The type of people you never see in the upper echelons of the official Australia Day medals. And it's quite interesting, isn't it? The 2 days on which awards are issued by the government to Australians for outstanding contributions is Invasion Day, the 26th of January, and King Charlie's birthday. How ridiculous. So in 2005, we decided to launch the Eureka Australia Day, sorry, the Eureka Australia medals for 6 activists. This year, Ballarat Trades Hall will choose 2. Here at the Anarchist Media Institute, we'll choose 4 individuals. Nominations will be closing soon. I know many of you are retiring. You don't like to blow your own trumpet. It's not about blowing your own trumpet, but if you know somebody who you think is worthy of receiving recognition, and that's what this is. They don't get money, It's recognition for the sacrifices they have made. Because every radical activist makes sacrifices. They make personal sacrifices. Some of them make sacrifices regarding their own personal lives. Some of them are black banned from jobs. Some of them are ostracised. And in many cases, people become depressed and marginalised and lose interest. So the Eureka Australia medals are about highlighting how important these people are to creating a more just, egalitarian community. So if you know somebody, what we need is their name, a few sentences on why, and a contact point. And as nominations will be closing in early November, about the 10th of November, please get your nomination in. How can you get your nomination in? You can email it to info@pibci.net. You can email it at info@anarchistmedia.org. You can leave a message on 0439 395489, or you can send us a letter, yes, and post it now, because it takes about a week to get there to Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. And don't forget to put Wednesday the 3rd of December in your calendar. And if you're working, tell the boss, I'm going to come in on the King's birthday and work for you, but I'm taking Eureka Day off, because to me, that is an important day. Let's move on. Oh, yeah, another little thing to remember is that on the 9th of November, which is a Sunday, 2 weeks away, or 2.5 weeks away, we'll be holding the Francesco Fantine Memorial Gathering at Murchison Cemetery in regional Victoria. And it starts at about 10 a.m. Now, Francesco Fantine was an anarchist who was arrested with 35,000 other Italians as an enemy alien. Although for the 20 years he'd been in Australia, he had fought against fascism in its various guises. He was put in a prison. He was put in a internment camp with diehard fascists, members of Mussolini's fascist party, and he was beaten to death with a club in 1942. Great tragedy. He is buried in the Murchison Ossuary with another 121 Italian prisoners of wars and people who died in internment camps. Part of Australia's forgotten history. You know, we had German Jews interned as enemy aliens in this country because they came from Germany. Japanese, Italians who'd lived here for decades. Some had even been born here as enemy aliens because of their nationality. Hopefully this doesn't happen again in this country's history, but we'll talk more about that as we get close to the day. So you're welcome to come along. Starts at 10 a.m. and usually there's an Armistice Day gathering, but it's not an Armistice Day. And it's on the Sunday before Armistice Day, so it's the 9th. So hopefully you can look up further information about it. Now, have you heard of the kerfuffle? I like that word, kerfuffle, kerfuffle. Well, the kerfuffle isn't that you're listening to The Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. That's not the kerfuffle. The kerfuffle is the Australian naval and air force presence in the South China Seas. Now, you see, and I'll talk about this in a few minutes, you know, Australia's welded to the hip, conjoint twins with the USA, the United States of America. And for decades, Western forces, including Australia, have been patrolling the South China Sea to ensure there is freedom of navigation. Now, obviously, freedom of navigation isn't an issue when the United States of America bombs boats in international waters, but that's a different story. So what you do is you get as close as possible in your little aircraft or your little ship to Chinese territory and say, look at us, look at us. Now, occasionally, the Chinese get a little bit upset. And what we saw in the last few days is a Chinese plane causing a bit of issues for an Australian plane, which they claimed had strayed into Chinese territory. Now, I remember, I think it was last year, when a Chinese flotilla circumnavigated Australian international waters, and how upset we were as a people that they had the audacity to use freedom of navigation excuse to circumnavigate the Australian continent and possibly try to gather information about what's happening in this country. Fair enough. Now, how would you feel that if every day you had Chinese planes coming to the edge of Australia's airspace? How would you feel if that naval flotilla was there permanently circumnavigating Australia in international waters, obeying international laws? Well, I'm sure we wouldn't be very, very, very happy about that. So when you look at situations, you need to put two and two together and actually compare the situations. So I'll leave it up to your imagination why the Chinese were so upset. So think about it. There's international waters for some, freedom of navigation for some, no freedom of navigation for others, and the list goes on and on. Let's move on. Pandering to the Washington buffoon. Isn't it wonderful? Conjoint twins. Australia and the USA. There we were, pandering to a buffoon. You know, flattery gets you everywhere. And Mr. Albanese, who has an extraordinary majority in the House of Representatives, I think it's 41 seats. I think they've got 94 seats, the Labor Party, and the Liberals have got 43, and the crossbench have got 10. So I think it's a 40-seat majority. And here they are, pandering to the US of A. Look, I wouldn't care if they pandered the US of A. But this wasn't about pandering to the US of A. This was pandering to somebody who thinks he's an emperor, a buffoon. No respect. How extraordinary. Seeing this charade, where we somehow have signed a treaty regarding rare earth minerals, which is not enforceable. And at the same time, we're Cooper Hoop because we're now fully integrated into the US military-industrial complex because of our little submarine deal with the Britain and the United States. And everybody thinks that, you know, that Mr. Rudd was a very bad man for bad-mouthing the buffoon in Washington before he was elected. And the Liberal Party thinks that, you know, he should be removed as ambassador from Australia, you know, for Australia from the USA. Now, you may not realise this, but 10 months, or is it almost a year? Now, 10 months into the buffoon's ascendancy in the US of A's presidential office, that we still don't have a USA ambassador in Australia. Not that it makes it much difference, but just out of interest. So I'm just sick and tired of the media predict the media's predictable response to the pandering that goes on to keep this buffoon on side. I mean, it's horrendous. Horrendous. What's the point? What's the point? Let's move on regarding buffoons. Now, you may not have realised that a former head of the Murdoch Empire in Australia had been appointed as the chairman of the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, which is the national broadcaster which you pay for your taxes. And if you think, oh, you say, I don't pay income tax, well, you do pay taxes because the goods and services tax, unless you don't buy anything, which is quite possible. Now, I've noticed a distinct change in the Australian Broadcasting Corporation since the appointment of a former Murdoch chairman to be the chair of the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. And let's not forget, he wasn't appointed by the Morrison-led Liberal government. He was appointed by Mr. Albanese and his crew, who really don't know what to do with their majority because they're so concerned about the, Murdoch media. I mean, a classical example was, who do you think asked the question of the buffoon in Washington regarding Mr. Rudd, the Australian ambassador? Obviously, Sky News, traitors in our midst. But that's a different story. So, what do I mean about the colonisation of the ABC? Well, before the appointment of this chairperson, the conservative elements and authoritarian elements in this society, in Australian society, tried to wear down the ABC by a constant litany of complaint. Complaint after complaint after complaint after complaint, drowning them. And obviously the Israeli lobby was, part of this, as well as the Institute of Private Affairs. I don't call them Institute of Public Affairs because that's a, oxymoron, because they promote private enterprise. So, and to a significant degree, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation self-censored. And that's why you no longer hear people with even a reformist agenda being taken seriously on the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. And I'll talk about how the Israeli lobby is, basically kill the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. So what has happened? One, we've seen the production, and this is positive, of more Australian series, which is very positive. But we've seen the colonisation of the Australian Broadcasting Corporation News Network, which is one of its major activities, by reporters and commentators from the Murdoch Empire, whether it's the Herald Sun, whether it's Sky News. So you get a little bit of commentary about something and all of a sudden such and such from Sky News is giving their opinion on the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. Extraordinary. They don't even have the staff anymore to create their own news network. And that news is so watered down and the analysis is so one-sided that it's almost irrelevant. It's a clone in terms of presentation, in terms of ideas, to what we see in the corporate-owned media in this country. It's a sad, sad day when we see the Australian Broadcasting Corporation on its knees, where it no longer provides independent news which is based on facts, although they claim they've got fact-checkers, but analysis which is based on ideology. It's a sad, sad day that I have to mention this. I remember, what, in the 80s, 90s, you get radical voices, reformist voices in the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. The staff at that particular time had a lot more ability to reach out and get different voices to make comments about issues which were occurring at that particular point in time. Then we had self-censorship. Then we had the board being colonised by the Howard regime, trying to shut down the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. Then we had a plan to privatise it before the National Party realised that it's basically the only news service that, you know, the only entertainment and news service is in many parts of regional and rural Australia, because there's no money to be made because by the private entities, because there aren't enough people. And the list goes on and on. And now we see an organisation which has basically become an appendage of the corporate-owned media. So it's no longer the government gilded ABC. The government doesn't need to gild the ABC, because very little comes out of the ABC in terms of news analysis that is different to the drumbeats that we hear, you know, the drumbeats, the same drumbeat we hear on the corporate-owned media. And it does make a difference. Because to a significant degree, and people say, oh, the legacy media, radio, television, you know, nobody watches it, only old people, it's irrelevant. But the problem is, and this is why the Murdoch Empire continues to support the Australian newspaper in this country, the only national newspaper, although it's never made a penny profit in the last 50 years, the fact is the legacy media sets the agenda, which is then put, the daily news agenda, which is then amplified in the asocial media. I'm going to use the word social media, but the virtual world. So seeing the Murdoch Empire, their bits and pieces being used as analysis when there are thousands of people out there in the society who can provide a much more balanced analysis, because the ABC has been so traumatised in the last two decades that the only people left in managerial positions are those who are willing to, aspire to make it a clone of the corporate world. Let's move on. Let's move on. Now, Israel has been exceptionally successful. It's been successful in killing people. It's been successful in invading its neighbours and killing people there. It's been exceptionally successful at destroying infrastructure, even essential infrastructure. It's been very successful at killing children, I think over 25,000. And let's not forget that the 67,000 who have died directly as a result of the Israel carnage in the Gaza Strip, which is a little area the size of half the size of Melbourne, with over 2 million people, which has been pounded now for over 2 years. But its greatest success in Australia has been the success of the Israeli lobby propaganda war. If what is occurring in Gaza was occurring, say, in Kiev in the Ukraine, was occurring any other place in the world, the Australian media would be agog with news stories about the atrocities that were being committed. Because it's not just the 67,000 that have died directly, it's the tens of thousands that have got permanent injuries. It's the hundreds of thousands who have died because of the lack of medical aid for everyday medical issues. It's the starvation, which has been used as a weapon. And we saw that very clearly when the ceasefire broke down 24 hours ago, when the Israeli forces stopped aid going into Gaza. So what we have seen in Gaza is tantamount to genocide and mass murder. And we've actually got a war criminal. Well, he's been charged as a war criminal. He's the Prime Minister of that country, which, you know, we love to think. But the great story out of this, the story that comes out of this is not the atrocities, not the fact that Palestinian history, began before the 7th of October 2023, but the fact that so many atrocities have been able to be brushed aside by the Israeli lobby in this country, to the extent that we have seen people in the entertainment industry, we've seen novelists ostracized and banned from particular institutions, from particular festivals, because of their disgust at the human misery that's occurring in Gaza, not because they support Hamas, because of the disgust, because they support Palestinian statehood. And we've even seen it filter into the hospital sector, where people as famous as Australian of the Year, Fiona Staley, who received Australian of the Year because of her outstanding work regarding skin grafts post the Bali bombing. We've seen the situation, even in the children's hospital in the grand old city of Melbourne, in one of the most foremost important hospitals in the world, one of the top five. We've seen the inability of people to raise the question of the fatalities and injuries that have been sustained as collateral damage by children in Palestine. So the Israeli lobby has been quite successful in hiding the magnitude of the atrocities that are occurring in Gaza as we speak. People think, oh, it's all over. It's not all over. Nothing has been resolved. The Israeli authorities still control the input into Gaza. Gaza is still 90% destroyed. There is no infrastructure left. And the list goes on and on. But we continue to focus on the fact that the Hamas has not been able to return 13 bodies, or is it 15 bodies, of Israeli hostages, who in many cases were killed by the Israeli armed forces through their carpet bombing of Gaza. And although we may hear a mention of this and a mention of that as far as what's happening in Gaza today, it's all about Israel. And this is one of the most successful propaganda campaigns I've seen in this country. It's extraordinary how the corporate-owned media and the government guild at ABC are willing to dance to the tune of their masters. And they dance to the tune for a variety of reasons. It's very simple. The first thing is you introduce short-term contracts, so presenters know that if they stray, their contracts won't be renewed. The second thing is you stack middle management with people with the same ideological position, so they determine what the agenda is. Because the presenters you see do not determine the real agenda. And then you have the financial constraints. And we've seen the Israeli lobby use its financial power as far as a number of arts boards are concerned and hospitals are concerned to deny people to hear the other side. just extraordinary. It really is. There's this fear, a fear of being ostracised, a fear of not getting a job, a fear that you will be hounded out of a media empire which is shrinking in terms of ownership. It's just extraordinary. So, that's why things like community radio are so important. Here at Community Radio Station 3CR in Melbourne, from which this broadcast comes from, you know, and we're always grateful to the Community Radio Network for sticking with the anarchist world this week for the last two decades. Very thankful. Because censorship and self-censorship is a growing problem in this country. Huge problem. Where ideas which don't fit the current parameters of what is acceptable no longer they're not considered to be acceptable. It's not considered to be acceptable to be against mass murder. It's not considered to be acceptable to be against the murder of children. It's not considered to be acceptable to see the carnage that unfolds before us. No wonder so many people are becoming ostracised or marginalised and feel that governments no longer represent their interests. But the problem is, it's very easy for forces in society which promote division and hatred to recruit in these situations when you don't have organisations which are willing to put their neck out and promote a different program which is based on inclusion. Very difficult. Exceptionally difficult. So as I said before, with the growth of the attention economy, the growth of virtual platforms, the centralisation of power and wealth in fewer hands, what we see is the creation of more authoritarian regimes. We no longer use the terms capitalist or communist. It's just about authoritarianism. And somehow, you are expected to sacrifice your future and the future of your children and grandchildren on that altar of private enterprise. You know, we're expected to worship Mammon. We're expected somehow to think that it's our country. All right? Well, first of all, it's not our country because it still belongs to the First Nations people who never ceded their authority, sovereignty. And then we're told we need to work together for the country. We're not working together for the country. We're asked to work together to continue the status quo, to continue the inequality that we see around us every day, the growing inequality, every statistical indicator. And I know it's the 21st century. It's the end of the first quarter of the 21st century, and we don't believe in statistics. We only believe in feelings, you know, you know, belief systems. Every indicator tells us that inequality is growing. Every indicator tells us that the climate emergency is upon us. Every indicator tells us that divisions are increasing in our society. Every indicator tells us that people are looking for convenient scapegoats. You know, we've had witches and we've had faggots, you know, in the past, you know, to burn. Then we've got, you know, today we've got, you know, minorities who have somehow raised themselves through direct action and parliamentary action into the sunlight, now being beaten back into the darkness by people who somehow think that it's their appearance in the sunlight that somehow pollutes the world. The pollution of the world, especially in Australia, is the fact that so much wealth is held by so few people who are unwilling to pay their fair share of tax. The list goes on and on. I'll leave it up to you. Now, something more pleasant. Now, my wife, late wife, Ellen Jose, died in 2017. That's almost 10 years ago. And she had two wishes. She wanted to continue the work towards reconciliation between First Nations people and the rest of society, as she was of Torres Strait Islander descent. And she wanted some support for young female artists. That's people who, you know, 35 and under, you know, identify as female. And 3 years ago, we set up the Alan Jose Art Award in conjunction with the Bayside City Council and the Bayside Gallery. And it's a $15,000 award, an open award, which is awarded to a female artist 35 and under. Now, the second Alan Jose Art Award will be held this Saturday at 2 p.m. at the Brighton Gallery in the Brighton Town Hall. It's the Bayside Gallery, I should say, in the Brighton Town Hall, at the corner of Carpenter Street and Brighton Street. That's this Saturday, the 25th. Now, if you want to come, turn up. If you want more information, go to the Alan Jose Memorial Foundation Facebook page. Alan Jose Memorial Foundation Facebook page. If you can't come on the opening, don't despair. The work of the six finalists will be on display until the 14th of December. So during the hot weather, if you find yourself down at St Kilda or on the beach there trying to, you know, refresh yourself, just go down to the gallery and have a look. These are six artists. I'd like to name them. They are the six artists include, and he's the idiot's looking for his piece of paper. That's me. Here we are. Casey Jeffrey, Jenna Lee, Amelia Lindo, Jackie Shelton, Mimi Hodgkin, Claire Jacques Vasquez, and there will be a winner announced. Now, these six young women were the shortlisted finalists from 400 people who applied, and they have been paid a curator's fee. Their work has been curated. They've learnt a lot about the private art world and the public art world, and it's a stepping stone possibly into a career which will last a lifetime, as very few artists, especially visual artists, are actually able to earn enough to survive. So it's a great privilege to be being the guest speaker at this event, which we've organised, the Alan Jose Memorial Foundation has organised in conjunction with the Bayside City Council. This is the second series, and it's a triennial event, so I encourage you to come along, especially people who knew Ellen. Many listeners to this program, long-term listeners, would have known Ellen and all the things she did, and it's held in honour of Alan Jose, a pioneering Indigenous artist, radical activist and social justice campaigner. Thank you for listening to The Anarchist World this week. Hopefully I'll see you on the 25th. If I don't, we'll see you around. Thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World this week on your local community radio station. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. My name's Joseph Toscano. This program has been brought to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. The program is podcast. You can go to 3cr.org.au. It is broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. Thank you for listening to The Anarchist World this week on your local community radio station. Hopefully, you'll be able to listen in next week. And if you can't, the program is podcast. And if you've got a friend, not your chat box, but a real friend, tell them about the podcast. Thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World this week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.